Welcome to today's edition of Feet to the Fire, where we're always challenging the status quo. For more cutting-edge commentary, go to feettothefire.org. That is feet, the number two, thefire.org. And now your host.
Good morning. It is Friday. Welcome to Feet to the Fire. This is your host, Sergio Fassa, and we are suspending our normal Friday schedule, what we call Friday Follies, insane items in the news from the wacko left, in order to bring you a special episode today, observations from a week in New York City. That's right. I've been with my church on a short-term missions trip in New York City, reaching some of the dispersed people groups from all over the world with the gospel. And I want to give some brief observations. We spent most of our time in Queens. Number one, there are these pockets, what I would call ethnic enclaves, in various parts of Queens. Corona, where you have a huge Hispanic population. You also have Astoria, where we met some Arab Muslims. We were also in Jackson Heights, where there's a lot of Hindus, folks from India and Pakistan, all over Southeast Asia. And also, I want to stipulate, as I talk about this, I'm going to have no fear of sounding racist, because I'm not racist at all. But whenever you talk about ethnicity or diversity, people will automatically accuse you, especially when you're on the right, of being racist. But I have a clear conscience because I'm not racist at all. And if anything sounds racist, then that's on the fault of the hearer, on the listener, for misinterpreting what I'm saying. But one of the things that I noticed about some of these ethnic enclaves is that they have become literally like third world countries embedded in a first world nation, the United States. And what's so tragic about that, here's what's so tragic. Politicians and people in the U.S. on the left who want to maintain this kind of distinctive separation in the name of multiculturalism and diversity and fairness, what they are doing is keeping people in the third world human misery out of which they were seeking to flee in order to find a better life in the United States. But politicians keep them in this place of poverty and misery so that they can keep them dependent on the government, so that they can exploit them for their vote. How sick and depraved when people come here for a better life and politicians keep them poor to use them for support and votes at the ballot box. And you do that simply by keeping them poor and keeping them on welfare dependent on the government. Now, what am I talking about as far as the basic problem? The basic problem in these areas is a lack of assimilation. Assimilation is an absorption, being absorbed into the greater, larger culture so that you can be a productive participant. And I am the son, the grandson of immigrants, mostly Italian, also German. And back then, generations ago, what would happen with the immigrants is they would assimilate into the culture. So my grandmother was not allowed to speak Italian at home because they wanted her to learn English, be fluent in English, and become an American. That was a point of pride and a way of advancing yourself. And this issue of language is really the crux of the issue. That's why you walk through these ethnic areas. And why am I saying they appear to be like third world nations? Because there's poverty. There's joblessness. You could see a lot of drug addiction. You can see that the people, a huge amount of the people, are not even English speaking at all, which is the language of the nation wherein they are currently living. But they can't participate in the culture because of the language issue. And this debate has gone on now for decades. Should immigrants, in the process of assimilation, be encouraged to speak and learn the English language? Should that be part of the assimilation process? And the left would say no, because it stifles diversity. And I'm making the argument that the language issue is one of the biggest problems. Language is key to keeping a culture together. Fundamentally, because what maintains the corporate identity ultimately is found in the law of the land. Our identity as Americans is not skin color. It's not ethnic background. It's our covenant community built upon our founding documents, not the least of which are the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, and the Bill of Rights. But when people are separated by different languages, diverse languages, they cannot agree on their common bond in their legal constitution. Listen, our founding documents are written in English. In order to understand them, in order to appreciate them, in order to have connection with your heritage and your legacy as a covenant community, you need to be able to read the documents and understand them in their original language. So, of course, these immigrants should learn English, and then they can carry out business transactions, be productive, enter into economic engagement, be lifted out of misery and out of poverty that they're still currently confined in. There's in these areas, there's trash everywhere. There's garbage everywhere. It's literally like you're walking through third world markets. It's cultural chaos in these areas. And who wants that? Who wants people? That's the thing. Oh, that's their culture. No, people don't love misery and poverty. That's not a cultural thing. That's the result of chaotic and lawless societies. They've escaped that. They left that. And we tell them it's okay to stay that way rather than bringing them in to the culture at large. It's terrible. Here's another thing that I observed. We went to the 911 memorial, and I mentioned this yesterday. What a somber place to be. I don't know if you've ever been there, but you've got to go. Words that come to mind: it is sacred, it's powerful, it's contemplative. It makes you think of that tragic event and the lives lost. It's a place of reverence. It wells up patriotism inside, but it also makes you contemplate your own mortality. Now, before I explain that, I want to mention, when you're there, you are absolutely disgusted by these liars and opportunists we call politicians, who say that January 6th was worse than 9/11. And they say that in order to gain political capital somehow on the January 6th quote-unquote insurrection, this narrative that they push to get people all angry in their attempt to consolidate support, political gain, and harm Trump and his conservative base. But how sick? Like I said yesterday, obviously the leftists did this, the Democrats, but even George Bush and other Republicans, sanctimonious, holier-than-thou, saying it was as bad as or worse than 9/11 in Pearl Harbor. And yet, as I've said numerous times, no one of the so-called insurrectionists had any weapons. No one on the apparently opposing side, which they say are the Capitol Police, died as a result of injuries sustained from the protest. And the only one that died, I say it numerous times, I'm going to keep saying it on my show, is Ashley Babbitt, the Air Force veteran, who was killed at the hands of Capitol Police. And yet, this is when no Americans died other than a victim who was there at the protest. This is worse than 9/11. And you know what? It degrades the people who died, the 3,000 lives lost on 9/11. It dishonors them. It degrades their legacy. And it shows contempt for real Americans who died. It's disgusting. And I want to get back to that other thought that I mentioned. You're confronted there with your own mortality. And if you haven't been there, it's very powerful how they designed it around the footprints of the original Twin Towers and the waterfalls flowing in, and it all flows into a deep cavern, a square cavern in the middle, making you think of these towers and the water flowing down, and you can't see the bottom of it. But as I said, it makes you think of your own mortality. And I was standing there, and my buddy made a great comment. He said, "You watch this and you realize we have to address the problem of death for every human." And he said this too. I'm stealing this from my buddy Dan. He said, "You have to take a step back," and he's a former Marine, "take a step back from the dramatic nature of what happened and realize that death is death. And what happened there is coming to every one of us." That's what you realize with that deep cavernous hole in the center of the memorial. And as Dan said, this is not taking away from the horror of what happened that day. But for us to stand there at 9/11 and think that we are better or are not headed to the same place of facing our own mortality and dealing with death, makes you think of that Bible story when the tower fell on those people and the Jews said, you know, was that because of their sin? And Jesus said, do you think they're worse than you? But unless you repent, you also likewise will perish. And so that's one of the reasons, obviously, the reason we're in New York is because we know that the only one who conquered death is Jesus Christ. When you're staring at that 911 memorial, facing up to your own mortality, and that you also are headed to a moment of death and reckoning before your Creator, you realize that the only hope is found in Jesus Christ. It's an incredible memorial. Those are some observations from a week in Queens and Manhattan, New York City. Let justice roll down like waters, America, and righteousness like an ever-flowing stream. Don't believe the hype out there. America is a great nation because she is a nation united around common values, the very values we see embodied in the 911 memorial.